Clearly, clearly what? Gratuitous sex?
I don't think
No.
there's any gratuitous sex.
Yeah, well, so the thing is, like I don't know, I get the sense that she's maybe not completely in love with me, but yeah, I don't know, it was strange, but there's a thing in it, there's this sort of crazy, unreasonable thing that happened within me when I touch her, right? And it's just I try not to seem like I'm super into her or desperate or something, but it's just like crazy wonderful to just, I don't know, it's like a topic sort of the thing.
Did you use the word conflict?
No, tantric.
Yes, tantric. That's right. Turns out
So,
everything is tantric.
yeah, everything is tantric, but because my sort of perspective is so fixated on like cute meditation girls, right? And whatever, romantic relationships. When I have, I don't know, that situation in front of me, right? It's like, it's really tantric.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. We wouldn't call it tantric if it weren't tantric. And what you've got going on is that.
Yeah, I guess so. And these different issues come up, and then it's like at the same time there's this crazy like insecurity, Yeah, and it's like in life, it's like I'm always in free fall. Everything's kind of like always just in free fall, right? But then there's these fixations where I want this thing to last for a long time, or I want, I just wanna, I want the thing that I imagine
Well,
that.
here's the difficulty. Nobody cares what you imagine or what your issues are. And curiously, you could join them. You don't have any issues except the ones that you report
Buy
on.
into it. Yeah.
You're creating them presently out of thin air.
And even though memory says that there's this pattern of things that happen,
Memory
and
doesn't
there's.
say that. That's just being conjured presently. You're just dreaming right now. There's nothing that happened before now. There's nothing that can be held attributable for now. So anything that you say about issues or genesis or memory is bullshit. Not to single you out, but consciousness does not know what it is, how it came about, why it came about, where it is, when it is, whether it's durable or not. So anything that you say is just a present, right? Present expression of metaphoric accusation. It's not real. And all of the nouns that you name and the objects and what they're responsible for is all made up.
But does it is how helpful it is it to hear that, or to
I
think
have
about that?
I who could answer that question? Only you. If you are pleased with yourself as a dreaming, dreaming apparitional being that can attribute all kinds of things to all kinds of things, then it might not be useful to hear that it's presently being made up, because you enjoy the making up. So it's only when you, one might be interested in the cessation or the exploration of the cessation of present imagination, then they might think this was worth kind of kicking around. But if you're fond of yourself as an imaginary being with issues and genesises of various kinds and outcomes and feelings, sentiments, then that means you're drunk with your own dreaming. And that's cool.
It seems like there's a lot of people who are more than happy to.
There's no people. There's just an idea presently arising in your head that you want to attribute as a quality that people have. But there are no people, and they have no qualities. You're just imagining some kind of implication presently out of thin air. There are no people. There really are none. Even though your day can be full of them and cordial encounters with them, there are no people. And so you can't attribute anything to them. They're just Pokey and Gumby showing up in your experience. Well, why would you attribute all kinds of qualities to a clay horse and a clay, God knows what he is, that Gumby guy with the pointy hat? Hold that. Hold your answer. Don't answer that quite so quickly. I'm going to go get my tea. So talk amongst yourselves.
What was Gumby anyway? Like, was he supposed to be a thing?
I'm Gumby, damn it.
You do kind of, I could see that.
You don't remember that skit from Saturday Night Live, Eddie Murphy?
No. I'm bad with that stuff. Steve looks like he does.
Gumby is this big green goober guy. He's kind of humanoid, but more flattish. And has eyes.
He is what?
Has big eyes.
Big eyes. Thank you.
I don't remember the question, so you can answer anything you want or nothing at all.
Gavin gave a great description of Gumby.
Oh, good.
Do it again, really.
Gumby's with the Lord.
He's kind of humanoid and flat. He looks humanoid, but he's flat.
He's Christian.
He's big eyes.
That was Davey.
I think you're confusing Gumby with Davy and Goliath.
I'm confusing Gumby with Davy and Goliath. Davy and Goliath were Christian. Gumby, he's just a sex addict. He's an equine fornicator, that Gumby. Yeah, right. The other guys are Christian. What about Johnny Quest? What was his deal? All right, so you see, you equine fornicator with a pointy hat. You see, you don't really know who you are, where you are, what the fuck is going on, but imagination pours in pretty much unannounced and irrefutably so. So you can't help but to create ideas on the spot, in situ, as we so-called sit here, because we don't really know what's happening. So we're just conjuring kinds of ideas that we're stitching together from sentiments and feelings and experiences, all of which are imagined. All of which are imagined. The entire inventory of yourself is imagined. The entire inventory of yourself is imagined. So what's real? If we care maybe to ask that question, well, we don't know. Here's present experience, but you don't know a goddamn thing about it, never have and never will. And yet you can dream up a storm, as anyone can, to tell a remarkable story about what's happened to them, what's happening to them now, or what they hope will happen to themselves in the future. None of it is real. The sentiments are imagined. The stories are imagined. The preferences, the implications are all imagined. All of it.
So you're just a figment of my imagination?
That's all I could possibly be. And that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is you're a figment of your imagination. You don't give a fuck about me. And why should you? I appear in your so-called experience. Who you really give a fuck about is the idea of yourself. You don't really give a fuck about yourself because you can't find that. What you give a fuck about is the idea of yourself, which is true.
But my idea of myself is dependent on my idea of people, right? Isn't that?
No, they're the same. They're equivalent. You can't separate them.
Oh, they're equivalent, yeah.
Absolutely, because your idea of people and your idea of yourself is still within that same bailiwick of, you know, having some kind of magical power for universe creation, for implication creation, which places you in a box, you know, in your own sentimental imagination. That's where most of us live. We live inside a playpen of our own referential imagination. And that's true, you know, whether you're lucky or not when it comes to, you know, fornication.
Did I have past lives?
Did what?
Or do I have past lives?
Do I have past lives? As many as you can find.
Yeah.
If you can find it, you got it. You own it.
Okay.
You see, whatever you own owns you. That's always the case, and that includes your ideas. If you have an idea, it owns you. If you have a history or a past, it owns you.
But you would say that about yourself, don't you have ideas?
Whatever you got owns you, no matter who we're speaking about. You can't really report on yourself, or me, or anyone else for that matter, from the past, what someone may have been experiencing in the past.
I can't go to a psychic and have a psychic reading and have them tell me about who I really am and what's going on energetically. And
you can have as many of those as you wish, past lives.
Okay.
But the psychic is just telling a dream to a dream that imagines that there were past events, that they were somehow conditioned upon or created conditioned circumstances hence. And then you can align yourself with the prognostications or the historical value of yourself through the eyes of the psychic. But you're still dreaming. You see, there's no moment other than presence, not even present. There's no moment other than presence. And it's replete. It's undeniable. It's absolute. Everything else is a story. Appearing in presence. That's all there ever is presence. Presence has no duration. It doesn't start. It doesn't begin. It doesn't end. It's not consumed. It doesn't flow. So if consciousness is fond of separating itself from presence, which is the only thing that can be found, it's the only thing that is, then you have a storyline. You have a curriculum vitae. And as that emerges, spontaneously and voluntarily emerges, then whatever you own owns you. So that story of yourself, the story of your life owns you. You become party to it. You become party to a contract written in invisible ink on thin air. An imaginary contract. It's just not any other way than that. Even though the content is so fantastic, as in past lives or psychics, right? Carnal encounters, subtleties, nuances, bliss, drugs, fascinations, hallucinations of all kinds, interdimensional beings, right? It all only can occur in presence. It's not secularly, independently real. If that doesn't fuck with your head, I don't know what will. It's a good moment for tea. Chocolate tea. It's good.
So is there like a continual delusion or misunderstanding that there is, well, I guess there is, that there's something other than what is present that is potentially able to be enjoyed more than what's in present, right?
No, because
no?
Again, you create a tapestry of things, a before and after, the capacity for greater enjoyment, which might be conditional upon something else occurring, and see, that's just being dreamt. You are nothing other than enjoyment itself, nothing other than bliss itself, nothing other than presence itself, completely unconditioned, never having occurred prior and never occurring hence, presence itself. And you can carve that up into all kinds of, you know, puzzle pieces.
If that's true, why is my sort of conscious experience other than continual enjoyment and bliss?
Imagination. Because you have ideas, and those ideas become binding. See, ideas, having ideas steers you away from startlement, the intimacy with presence itself. Because ideas start to create a factory farm of association, a factory farm of living anecdotally or hypothetically in imagination. And as long as you're living in imagination, as soon as you begin living in imagination, then, right, all sorts of distractions or unenjoyments occur. But presence, as in whatever, you could say doesn't suffer that distraction. Presence doesn't suffer any distraction.
So it's like I enjoy living in imagination more than I enjoy living in presence. Or that makes sense. One can say that.
Who could accuse you of anything? if one makes an accusation, either of another or of themselves, right, then the universe has been fractured again, fractured into a daydream.
And there's no condition that I need to be alleviated of?
As many as you want. It's endless. You can have as many issues and as many conditions as you wish. They all fall into the same shoebox as past lives and psychics.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it would, it just, it's such an attractive idea. It seems like it just, it makes sense that I would have to overcome something, right? That this self would have to overcome something to overcome
the next thing. That's what you have. You have an endless stream of, you know, what you're going to overcome next. Hello, Suzanne.
And everybody else.
Hello.
I know it can be, you know, maybe thought of or received as being a little, you know, rude or a little glib, a little too sharp or a little too steep. But if one speaks about, you know, these kinds of things in a sing-song manner, by presuming that there can be implications, and it's just, you know, by the rules, you're off and dreaming because you've conjured a field of objects that are not other than themselves, that affect each other, that create implications, karma. And then after you create this field of unavoidable affliction, then you can conduct yourself in a manner to transcend these afflictions. So the creation of affliction and the attempted transcendence of that affliction are all within that same right field of psychics and past lives, issues, problems.
So one doesn't have to step into the field of affliction that has been created?
Who knows? That's what one might wish to find out. Right? I mean, if someone says, yes, of course, then what good is that to you? If you have to have the interest, the context, the motive, however that occurs, to find out what your present condition is, and if you might be fond of there being some other condition, or curiously, you know, no condition. I mean, it doesn't really help us to say Sri Ramakrishna was enlightened. What? He still owes me money. You see, that's why it's like, to ask a question about the nature of spirituality or if there is enlightenment or this or that, da-da-da-da-da, you're going to get a million answers from a million different sources, and none of them do you any good. Because they undoubtedly, indubitably, fall all into that same category of imagined implication.
Sorry.
That's all right. You can pee while we're talking.
I'm not peeing. Pouring a seltzer.
Oh. Well, that's just...
I have some boundaries.
That's just so rude.
I have some boundaries.
So what if you don't want anything from anybody? What if you don't want anything from yourself? What if you don't want anything from, you know, this presence or the present moment or all of the shit on your to-do list that you just don't want to do? What if you don't need anything? You don't need to be defined by how well you're doing or how poorly you're doing or whether you're smoking too much or too little pot or having too much or too little sex or what your family thinks about you, you know?
It seems like it... It's comforting to tick off those little things, right?
Okay. That could be a motivator, you know. If something is comforting, who knows? You might want to look more deeply into it or return to whatever it is that provides that sense of comfort. You see, all you can do is dream yourself up, like now. Nothing really happened to you prior to this moment that has any consequence, except the one that you imagine, the one that you create, the implications and the lines in the sand that you draw, the fear, the joy, the longing, the, you know, acquiescence. Who knows? We're trying to create some kind of apparency of meaning, borrowing from just a pure field of hallucination.
Yeah. Well, the problem is understanding stuff. And, I want to understand and then allow it to happen.
Yeah, well, see, that approach is like the idea of there being something additive or complementary to your present experience that will then permit you or invite you into experiencing things differently. That means you're just a poser who's deferring his own appreciation of present experience by thinking that something other than this should happen to you that will turn out to be better somehow.
Again, it's sort of comforting, right? That, I'll wait until I understand, and then I'll acquiesce to what is.
Yeah, okay, right. That's like saying, you know, to the warden, you know, will you unlock the door? The warden says, we never locked it. Your sentence is done, Gavin. You can leave the prison now. You don't have to remain safely in your cell, you know, wondering what's going to happen to you next so that then you can leave the cell. You can walk out of the cell right now.
So you say that, but it's like I want to hear it from lots of other people, right? Like a whole group of people that have authority.
Oh, I don't have any authority, but
no
I
one,
can say it.
No
I have a lot of
authority. I definitely don't have any authority.
Do it, yeah.
You can walk out.
But even the sense of there being, you know, someone that was behind an imaginary prison door that's been given, you know, an invitation to walk out, that's still, you know, we're just dawdling in the humor of myth. Huh. As present experience, let's say, reveals to one that it's miraculously empty of nature and empty of self-nature, then all of those hooks of my mind, my body, myself, my wealth, my health, my future, all of those hooks, can we say, dissipate. They're no longer triggering in one's consciousness. So if the hooks of self-manufacture are no longer triggering in one's whatever consciousness might be, then you're not defining present experience as being anything in particular. And so no story is being told about the harmonic of presence. Now there's nothing to be free from. This is not, you know, intended to be belligerent or some kind of imposed stillness or imposed silence. It's merely the playful, let's say, reinforcement that ideation is appearing in consciousness and that ideation suggests to you relevance, content, context, past, present, future, implication. And you could see, wow, every fucking thing I think is loaded with past, present, future, and implication. And wow, it's all imagined. Then maybe you put it down. You don't have to transcend it, you know, or refuse it. You just put it down. You're not following this kind of compulsion to define yourself through memes and associations or stories appearing in presence. So it's like, ha ha, fuck you, you're awake. What else could you be? You don't have to be having any particular visions or sensitivity or anything at all. Because whatever you expect to find on the other side of the imaginary boundary that keeps you from being enlightened, whatever you imagine you're going to find is just something you imagine you're going to find. We're waiting to get hit with some kind of thunderbolt from where exactly? When, just as this is, we, without any effort, refrain completely from ideation. Presence becomes palpable, joyful, intimate. And so we're not processing whatever we might call present experience. We're not processing it as being made of anything.
But it's like I want some sort of special proof of what you're saying. Like I want some special experience to happen, and then.
Yes, that experience is exactly what's happening now.
Yeah, you can't actually validate anything. It does like to try.
it's that impulse to set yourself apart and then wish to validate that drowns out your, let's say, sensitivity or enjoyment of presence on its terms. There is, you know, with all, what, full disclosure, this is mutagenic. It's mutative. It warbles. It morphs. So, you have to, let's say, chill for a little while and chill again for a little while and chill again for a little while so that you're giving some space for your idea of your present experience to leave you the fuck alone and so that you enjoy feeling this morph on its own terms.
This morphing on its own terms, isn't that what I'm doing? Like I am making the morphing? Is it I mean, if we talk in a very transcendental sense.
No, you don't need to anthropomorphize it as what I'm doing or that anything is even happening. That would all, you know, go back to the kind of frivolous notion that there are events and that there could be an author or a premeditation for those events. There are no events. There's no author and there's no premeditation. Or, not to be such an asshole about it, there's as much of that as you want. It'd be foolish to think that it has to be one way or another, or a thousand ways or a thousand other ways. It's so malleable that you can make it be what you want it to be. You can imagine it to be what you imagine it to be, whether that's willful or deliberate or also spontaneously appearing. Well, that's up to you to discover. It's kind of like if we're looking for enjoyment or comfort, spiritual understanding, some kind of.
Sorry about that.
It's quite. Is that Commissioner Gordon?
Yeah.
Not again.
Put him on. I'm sure he wants to talk to the bat.
To the bat?
If that's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. Well, Kevin's really the bad because he ends up going out. She just does the guy. What's the guy that his little assistant's dude's name?
Alfred.
Alfred. She answers the phone and stuff.
Jeremy Irons. Where were we?
Things don't have to be. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
What I was attempting to say was put a name on what Jeff's describing. I came up with it in a conversation today about why Facebook is so horrible and corrupting. His lament was that his brother spent so much time on Facebook and when he meets a girl, he doesn't know what to do. He does not know how to handle that, and thus he has no women in his life. So the name I put on it was that this moment that we're in is immersive. It's like being underwater, where every cell of your body and every aspect of your being is intensely caught up with that moment. And the escape into Facebook renders that moment no more than a statistic, because everybody keeps score on how many friends they have, how many whatever they do on that day. And that's such an abstract event. This is the event of the occurrence of artificial intelligence, be looking at that screen all the time. And the immersive event is beyond reconciling. You just have to swim in it. And if you keep yourself extracted from it in an abstract event, then you're kind of overwhelmed. I mean, how many things are going off when you see a good-looking chick and you're a single guy? The flood of hormones, the smell, what it looks like. He talks. And
I like this X-rated stuff.
It can be that.
I didn't hear everything you said because I was checking my Facebook page.
I don't have Facebook anymore, but I was checking my email.
Hey, what can I say?
I was looking at pornography.
I like these meetings. You can do whatever you want. And nobody would know. You know, it's like the card trick where you're like, you know, you're betting and you don't know what the card is on your own forehead. I'm going to bet you a dime. I got like the two of clubs up here. The most painful nuisance is to imagine that, you know, you're someone that has a future.
Well, everything outside of the immersive event is constituted of words and memory. The five sense experience doesn't play a part in it.
Yes. At one level, yes, the right content that appears as daydream steals one away from a certain authenticity. But even to suggest that the five senses might be a resting place, I think can also be,
We can't establish where the hell they're coming from.
Misleading, yeah.
And we're not in charge of them.
Well, that they even occur is an idea. You see, having thought is an idea. Right. Having five senses is an idea. Being the recipient of data of some kind is another idea. Right? Being of the body or not of the body, of the mind or not of the mind. Again, these are, you know, kind of like dichotomous yogic puzzles. They don't really mean anything. So one goes and seeks, one goes in search of not being the mind and not being the body. Well, so now consciousness has got you by the short and curlies. So now you think you're consciousness, or you think you're, you know, somehow a receiving scintillation or receiving being of some kind of data. So it gets very weird. Because animus will, you know, poke its head out of the otherwise undifferentiable plasma and claim itself to be the lowest common denominator of experience. No matter how subtle you go into, let's say, being released from the mirage of the world, you're always going to find some impish impulse of animus to say, oh, I'm at the bottom of all this. It won't be true. Not thinking, not thought, not the five senses, not even present experience. Now what? All of a sudden present experience is now the loss leader in our box store. We don't know anything. We know so little that even to call this present experience is a prehistoric form of accusation. It's so 2050. or if it's April, then imagining that this is consciousness is so March. Yeah, we stopped doing that toward the end of last month. It's so painful. I don't know why I'm smiling when there's just nothing left to call this. Because see that tiny hint of animus that places us somehow in the matrix, in the equation, is so subtle. There's no end to it. Are you experiencing now? Well, I don't know what am I supposed to say about that? Well, of course I'm experiencing. Really? What is it that you're experiencing? To tell you the truth, I have no idea. What are you experiencing with? Well, I don't know, the five senses plus the capacity of mind. Well, what's that exactly? Well, to tell you the truth, I have no idea. What if this being as it is does not presume that it's experiencing? What if there were so thin or no thin association with what we refer to as present experience, no association with it at all, then what? Would it be something you needed to transcend, something to understand, something to get a leg up on, something to be spiritual about, that you would benefit somehow from some kind of actualization? I mean, good luck. There's a Jeannie Zandi retreat near you. Any retreat, if it were any good, you know, would take about an hour or two to lay down these tracks. And then the rest of the retreat would be, you know, you may as well just go straight into the talent show. Don't process anything with anybody. You just lay down a few tracks in the first hour or two, and after that it's like, oh, yeah, well, we may as well just go straight to the talent show.
I don't need some wise, compassionate other to align with me and to bring me along.
You need at least 30 million of those over 30,000 lifetimes. That's how many that's how many you need. Yeah. Whether it's one or 30 crore, as the Indians like to say. 30 crore, C-R-O-R-E, or something like that. That's a lot. It means a lot.
That's a lot.
Fucking lot. 30 crore is a lot. Whether it's one of those or 30 crore of those, you're not going to be any better off than right about now. Now, I mean, again, we're having a conversation with a few friends sitting in their respective living rooms, right? I mean, if we were meeting like this in a Syrian refugee camp, maybe we'd be talking about something else. It really sucks here. God, does it suck here. Family members, I'm the last one.
I ate grass soup today.
Yeah. I sure hope they don't send us back to Turkey because they're just going to kill us there. You know, it's a different conversation. I don't profess to think that this conversation should somehow be relevant or useful to, you know, 7-point-something billion people. It's just the six of us, you know, kicking this shit around, right? It's at least on this call, it's a white person's, you know, game. It's mixed gender, but it's, you know, one race.
Bunch of honkies hanging out in virtual reality.
Yeah. Bunch of fucking honkies talking about something like enlightenment as what? What? Because we all suck at bowling and no league will have us. So we're like, oh, well, this is the next best place to be. The Lonely Hearts Club of really shitty bowlers.
Did you show Jeff as we character?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Really?
Yeah, I can't wait for any opportunity to tell everyone about how crazy you are.
For me? or him?
Both.
Oh. The Wii character designer.
It's kind of deranged, kind of really.
Well,
you get a restraining order against me.
It's not like we didn't know you had it in you.
Wasn't that much of a surprise.
No.
We didn't even, like, lose a step in our walk. We barely slowed down while I was showing them the pictures. They're like, uh-huh, of course.
Yeah. If it's from Suzanne, we know it's good.
The only problem is when I try to play tennis, the Jeff and the Francine characters, they just end up smoking in the back.
You mean you can't even get a good tennis game out of them? They just toke up and hit the TV lounge.
That's just the only way that your excuse to get yourself to do that. You have to create Wii characters.
Yeah.
Alternate personality.
This tennis game sucks. I think I'll just light up and put a chicken pot pie in the oven.
We could eat it on the tennis court.
Where did Gumby the equine fornicator go?
I didn't know that was his nickname.
Mm-hmm. It is now. You got to be careful with
the story. He switched Gavin the Great to Gumby the equine fornicator.
Yeah, he's now Gumby the equine fornicator.
All right.
Which is.
Hey, that girl over the weekend was not a horse.
We're gonna have to call him Geff for short. Geff.
Which is a promotion, you know. Gavin the Great to Gumby the equine fornicator is a promotion and status. I'm learning to hate every idea that I have. I really hate them. It's like having some kind of like, you know, nagging mother-in-law or mother, whatever, if you're Jewish, and having her just berate you all the time. Just manipulate and control and berate you all the time. I'm like, oh, who are you? Why are you appearing in my head? Leave me alone. I'm not as bad as you think. And I don't want to have to defend myself.
To myself.
To myself.
So
who
there.
Are you? Where did you come from? Just stop pelting me with your horrible ideas. God, it's like tennis size hail.
Can't get away from it, ever.
Oh, it's just, oh my God. I'm too little of this. I'm too much of that. I do too little of this. I do too much of that. Oh, spirit. Oh.
Can everybody see Jeff's Wii character?
I'm too white.
No. It's not working.
No, the feedback is doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Oh, thanks. You can text it to us or something.
Okay. I have to get some apple juice.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be back.
We got to get back on track here.
Have we strayed?
We strayed.
All right. Well, what's the theme?
So, I have another question. Right. Well, back to something you said about those. So it sounds like there's not even one person here, right? So I think that I'm a person. I think you all are people.
No, you just think. No, you don't. You just think that you think that.
Okay.
You just think that you think that you think that perhaps you think, and maybe some days you think that you think that you are a person. You don't really think you're a person. You only think that you 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 might be a person. So you are such a poser. You are so transparent. I don't even know why we let you on this call. I'm teasing, of course. But everyone got frightened. Oh, really? Is he like? You see, you don't know anything. No matter what you say about yourself or anybody else, you only think that you're thinking that, or at least 10 iterations back. I mean, truly, that's how empty our assertions and explanations and aspirations are.
Without thought, what is there?
That's an interesting question, sure. Yeah, without thought telling you what there is, what is there? You just don't know. This
lots of tingles. Lots of tingles, as Peter Brown would say.
Okay, that's one way to play it. Sure, you can go to a call it textural or somatic, energy body, whatever level, and just notice. Yeah, notice the froth or the buoyancy, the tingles, the. Right? Kind of the raw sense that there's presence. That's the immersion of the jnani. But it's non-specific. Because it's now there's no longer call it an individuated attention, giving attention to that which can be felt. As the yoga gets thinner and thinner, yes, you could say that there's still a sense of attention, giving attention to whatever we might refer to as the present moment and what is the naked or raw or unadulterated data stream that's actually present. And yeah, then you can come up with tingles and fuzz and buzz and plasma and just delicious nuance of, sensation or sub-sensation. And then you can't find the boundary field anymore between sensation and imagination. You see? You can't feel the boundary field anymore between what you would call sensation, that which is found, that which is felt as sensation, and imagination. Present imagination. Now you're starting to squeak through the, what'd you call it? The great lie of phenomena.
So I'm hallucinating the tingles?
No, that would be saying way too much. What you might refer to as tingles are felt. Thinner than that, there are no tingles and there's no felt. See, if you one, any of us, goes into what we might refer to as the wormhole of presence and naturally just are relieved of mental association, of emotional or sentimental association, of textural association, of consciousness as the associator, You can't say much about anything. That's, if I can be so bold and glib, that's liberation. That's the zone, right? It's the sweet zone of awake is attention has gotten so relaxed that it's no longer finding distractible objects. And then attention relaxes further where, after imagining that it has found itself, that too becomes undifferentiable or undifferentiable, undefinable. You've fallen through the trap door where there's no loyalty to even present experience. There's no loyalty to consciousness. You've fallen through the trap door. Again, this is a white person's conversation sitting on comfortable couches in one's living area.
Organic apple juice.
Sipping organic apple juice, chocolate tea, club soda, God knows what else. You know, rather than hoping someday by virtue of hundreds of, you know, so-called authority figures telling you anything at all, so that after all of these pronouncements you can say, ah, I must be enlightened, or they've told me I'm enlightened, or I can leave the prison because they all told me I can leave the prison. You see, these are just imaginary deferral dreams, deferral mechanisms. In a sense, these are avoidance mechanisms by falling prey once again to consciousness having something to say about the matter. You think, because you think something, that consciousness has something to say about the matter, but it doesn't. Then maybe we're relieved of the insistence that we appear to suffer from. That this should be something, that it should be about something, that I should come to some kind of palpable recognition of one thing or another someday. You can only be imagining those things, including yourself, to be on the lookout for some kind of magical enlightenment experience. I mean, that has got to suck. I mean, every seeker knows that waiting for enlightenment really sucks. And yet, how many seekers, you know, sincere, inspired, invited aspirants to the game are, what, ready to put it down? You see, what is it that's on the lookout for experience? Experience. Right? You find yourself on the lookout for experience, on the lookout for feeling this a certain way, being the beneficiary of some kind of enlightenment moment, enlightenment aha, freedom from self, whatever metaphors you want to throw at it. But you see, as long as you are experience in pursuit of refined experience, then again, you're trapped. You think that you are something, and that something owns you. Right? That's how this is so excellent at self-obscuring, because experience goes on the lookout for more experience and anthropomorphizes along the way and never takes notice of that. You see, we anthropomorphize under the radar. It's in our face, but it occurs under the radar. And then thus anthropomorphize, we go in search of experience to qualify what we think is our present experience or the need for experience, or that experience should appear a certain way, because we've already anthropomorphized. We are already dumb fuck seekers. Now we have to have a destination. Now we have to have a fulfillment. That's how a dumb fuck seeker remains a dumb fuck seeker, because the dumb fuck seeker wants to have fulfillment. Try getting out of that loop. We'll have to put the myth of fulfillment down. We have to put the myth of being a dumb fuck seeker in pursuit of experience down. Because enlightenment is craved as experience. Right? And the craving, the movement of the craving, and that something like enlightenment has been objectified by the anthropomorphized craving, insists that you will only find more of your shitty self. Enlightenment as an object, as an idea, sought by the anthropomorphization of shitty craving. That's all you got. Put it down. Or die trying. Life is short. It'll come soon enough. Ah, you see how quickly, how effortlessly consciousness snookers us into imagining that we are made of consciousness, that we are of the nature of consciousness, that we are experiencing and we should experience more or better or differently. What if that were just not what's going on here? I'm not saying we go to zero. Nobody can say where one goes if one, you know, were existent in the first place to go anywhere. Just looking at the, right, the presence, the organic presence of the craving for different or more or better or future experience. Best to you. Tell your girlfriend I say hello. Now it's just us.
Now we can talk about methods to get enlightened.
Got rid of that guy. Let's get down to it.
Number one.
Number one. Stare into a flame. Number two.
With only one eye.
Paint the Om symbol on your shaved head with wet hot wax. Number three. Get on a Telesat song with Pamela Wilson. Number four. Share gluten-free pizza with a friend. Hey, this sounds like it's going to work out someday. Number five. I know what number five is.
Yeah?
See an IMAX movie once a month.
And those methods were found in a book in a cave in Peru, or?
That's right. Right, underneath a Mormon skeleton.
Yeah, those are legit, right?
Under a Mormon skeleton, copulating with an underage wife. Which is proof that the method works.
You're looking for validation.
Yeah.
Better than this.
Travel to Mecca and set up a pulled pork grill. Run for your life forever. Ha ha ha. urinate in all the hats at the Vatican. I'm sorry, did we get off track again?
I don't think so.
He speaks.
He was busy. What does court people do when people are talking? They take the little notes. What are they called?
Yeah.
Court reporter?
They're called something cooler than that.
Really? Equine fornicator with a...
Equine typewriter fornicator.
Davy, is there really a god? Sure, Goliath. I believe there is. Davy, will he have Alpo for me?
He sure will, Goliath. You and me both. I mean, just you. I'm going to hang with Gumby. And his real cool horse.
Well, okay, Davy. Suzanne looks perplexed. She's not, doesn't remember Davy and Goliath.
She's kind of disassociated there for a second, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Davy's the canine fornicator.
That's right.
He's always a canine fornicator.
This sangha is made of irreverent fornicators. A bunch of fucked fuckers. With nowhere to go and nothing better to talk about.
Talk about pride.
I am so ashamed. Oh, God. Somebody talk about something spiritual quick.
I don't know, Davy.
Will I be enlightened when I die? Oh, God. This must be suffering. This is what the Buddha was talking about. This must be it.
Oh. Definitely a weird bardo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Is this what Jesus was talking about when he said something about in God's mansion there's many windows?
That's what he meant.
Well,
that's what he meant. He was like, oh, I see a vision of the night sky, Sangha. In God's realm, there must be many windows.
At least four.
At least four. I will set them forth to usher in a new age of equine fornicators with pointy hats.
People will respect for a long time, and then later, way later, they'll come out and everyone will find out they were just actually equine fornicators.
They will be the ancient aliens.
Oops.
To set the humanity on a course of sustainability.
You mean people respect us now? I didn't know that.
I will set forth my students into the world. Usher in a new age of sustainability. Freedom from tyranny. People of genocide. Legalization of all narcotics. Campaign finance reform. A vote for Bernie Sanders and a new future in my name. Davy, does this mean that we'll be traveling with Christ?
It sure does, Goliath. It sure does.
Any questions?
Could you just remain talking in Davy's voice?
I think Timmy is better. Okay. There must be an important spiritual theme that we can address in a responsible manner.
I can't take anything seriously now.
Fuck. God damn it. Not even Byron Katie.
It's really Katie Byron.
Katie Byron. I'd like to be empowered someday.
It'll happen.
There's an Opturian workshop in Maryland in 2 weeks. I think I'll go to that.
You'll get there.
I'm on my way. I can feel it. My spirit guides suggest. Based on my past life matrix and my hollow dynamic way through the pineal gland, that I should go to Maryland next week and participate in an Arcturian workshop.
Arcturian? Or Nocturian? I don't even know what you said.
Arcturian.
An octogenarian workshop.
Like King Arthur?
Yes, I'm going to be playing the piano at an octogenarian workshop where they'll be studying the healing ways of the Arcturians.
While channeling the Pleiades.
Channeling the Pleiadians while stimulating the pineal gland with their pineals.
All for the low price of...
For the low price of...
I'm still trying to figure out that whole tongue and the pituitary. How exactly does that work?
You can't figure it out. You just
have, to go to the workshop.
You just have to go there.
Or just wait. I'll find
that's
out.
That's a little aggressive. We'd have to close down the spiritual the shop on the Night Sky Sangha webpage that sells scissors so you can cut the bottom of your tongue so you can stimulate your pituitary gland, the base of your skull. Only $12.95. Blessed by...
Be like, shut it down! Shut it down!
Blessed by the Reverend Dingle.
Reverend Dingle.
Such a man lived, you know. The Reverend Dingle.
And that Reverend Dingle's friend.
That's right. From Joshua Tree, California. We bring you the remains of the Reverend Dingle. Yes. So, you see, consciousness has you on the lurch. It throws you out on the balcony and then closes the sliding glass door behind you. And you think something's happened, that you're out on the balcony, all alone, with the locked sliding glass door behind you and the pool 30 stories straight down. Do I jump? Do I swim? though I crash through the broken glass. Yes, Beth reminded me we were talking about Yolande in the car. We were driving back from visiting my lovely parents on Long Island. She said in Yolande's book, her son died suddenly, very shortly after her so-called awakening occurred. The involuntary seizure of herself. And in the book, she recounts the story how she was just not afflicted with grief. She did not have a sentimental, psychiatric, spiritual, perhaps not even somatic reaction to the loss of her son. And she remarked that people that knew her, that didn't know what had happened to her or couldn't possibly have understood it anyway, thought that she was just suffering from some kind of dissociative, you know, reaction. That she was in a kind of shock. And as she recounts, that just was not the case. So I don't know, maybe freedom from grief, the loss of one's child or one's spouse, not having a, let's say, an afflictive impact on your consciousness. That's kind of like a superpower, isn't it? For humans, the way that we feel and wander through life and what we anticipate or what we suffer from or imagine that we'll suffer from, right? To hear a story about someone that lost their own child and didn't suffer, you know, grief or affliction, despair, disorientation. It's like having a superpower, you know, some kind of invulnerability. We can't fathom it. We can't really imagine it. It might sound enviable to some. It might sound despicable to others. It's hard to frame it, really. You know, to put it in a context as something worthy of envy. Or something just to note, or something to, you know, refuse. I don't know anything about freedom. Where it goes, what it is, where it takes you. What magical powers of some kind of invulnerability may occur, you know, in the aspirant's arc or journey. You can't make any promises about anything. If one had to imagine why a parent, the mother of a son, didn't suffer from grief or affliction. Some kind of, you know, psychic shock or victimization. And, you know, it's interesting to imagine what that might feel like or why that so-called person would behave that way, react that way, or what would it portend about their consciousness or experience that they didn't suffer from what we would all expect to occur was, you know, shock and grief and despair, you know, ongoing for the rest of one's life. And according to her, we can take her, you know, at her word. Why not? Because it's just an experiment anyway. We take her at her word that there was no such affliction. How is that possible? And again, was that something we would appreciate, might envy, might wish to understand more deeply, or something that we would scoff at as being kind of repugnant? I don't fucking know.
It's totally arbitrary.
It seems that way. You know, you think of a let's say a group of 300 people or whatever the hell it is, you know, sitting during an Adyashanti, you know, Zen soiree where the food's good and you can journal. What do they want? You know, what do they want from him? What do they want from that retreat? What do they want from themselves? If anything, what do they want from the, you know, their fellow companions on the retreat, if anything? What are we trying to discover? What are we trying to find out? Why all the contemplation? Why all the noting? Why all the noticing? Why all the traveling lighter? Why all the JYNs and the turnarounds and the four questions? Why? For what? What discovery do we hope to make? Do we demand to make? Do we insist on occurring between now and the day that we might die? What keeps an aspirant in the game, right? What keeps a seeker in the game? I mean, you have all of your vitality, however much you've got, at your disposal. And one way that you spend your time is to, and I spend my time, is, as if I had any, was to participate in this kind of a conversation. What does it mean? What does one want at the end of a 3-day weekend with Adam? You see, as long as there's this lingering demand, the lingering demand or insistence or entitlement on consciousness itself, on experiencing itself, on feeling myself or presuming myself to be a person, right? In a life, on a journey, trying to discover. Right? That imagination paints a picture of an unavoidable context and content for what we take ourselves to be. And we can say without hesitation, oh, I want Kensho, I want self-realization, I want enlightenment, I want awakening, I want whatever you want to call, whatever it is that you want to call. I want to have, I want to prepare myself, I want to practice, I want to purify, I want to understand. Right? In this marvelous vector of the eye that wants to understand or the eye that wants to discover and place everything into a tidy spiritual context of some kind. That's the delusion of consciousness. That eye is the delusion of consciousness. It's the delusion of the anthropomorphization of experience. And if there's an eye, then the eye can only be in search of objects. The eye not being genuinely so, just imagined to be, goes in search of objects as experience. Experience is now an object. The way that I feel is an object. The way that I see and sense and enjoy or don't enjoy things has become an object. And that loop of a sense of self, a sense of individuation in search of objects in space or time or occurring in life or occurring in experience at all is how this gets us. It's myth. The profundity of its myth is so incredible, so well stitched together. You know, it takes kind of a miracle of its own accord to manufacture the myth, and it takes a similar miracle to untangle from the implication of the myth. What's interesting is the myth and the implication of the myth are exactly this. The myth, the implication of the myth, the untangling from the myth, and that which one might hope to discover or find, is all baked in. It's like when there's nothing left of you, right? The insistence on the myth of consciousness is not binding. One is not trying to resolve consciousness for it to become something, to turn into anything, to be finally understood or experienced in an optimal manner. That's the end of time, the end of psychological time. Which is this batshit wacky consciousness. Is the end of time. How's it going, Bruce?
What's going on? Because Bruce is like, I see the four squares, and underneath there's Bruce, and it looks like he's out in the middle of the night sky or something.
I know, like, he's like, Floto Bruce. He's looking a little bit like Gumby. He just doesn't know what that means yet. It's not fair to accuse anyone of looking like Gumby if they don't yet know what that means. You know, there's the gradual thing and there's the sudden thing. The gradual thing is when, you know, we one, whomever yabbers about this stuff from a voyeuristic point of view. We yabber about reality from a somewhat voyeuristic or, you know, disconnected point of view. That's the gradual. But you can yabber about your ideas of reality from a voyeuristic platform sense. And then the sudden approach is just this. It's no longer gradual. There's no longer the impulse of some kind of binding representation. The This is Commissioner Gordon. Who answered the phone when they called who did Cato work for? The Green Hornet.
O.J. Simpson?
Was O.J. Simpson the Green Hornet?
Cato Kalin.
Yeah. That's right. Cato worked for O.J. Simpson. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was Mrs. Kardashian. Mrs. Kardashian with the bikini in the pool room. Kim Kardashian with the butt cheeks in the sunken living room. Colonel Mustard was killed by Kim Kardashian's butt cheeks in the sunken living room.
I've talked to schizophrenics who made more sense, but yeah.
That's great. That would make like the front page of one of those trashy magazines. Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Her butt is so big.
Mrs. Plum was killed by Kanye West's breath. In the pantry. Celebrity clue.
I'm looking up trying to rationalize it. I'm like, how did Kanye West get into a pantry?
Mrs. Scarlet was killed by Miley Cyrus's tongue in the foyer. Celebrity clue, join us.
She's actually reptilian. Illuminati.
You gotta help us, Bruce. We'll just flip the fuck out unless you get us on track.
How did he not get a square? That's what I wanna know.
He's broadcasting in the dark.
It's like gravity, and he's out there, like George Clooney.
He's self-luminous. He looks like Stanley Tucci.
He does. He does a little, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Francine looks a lot like Francine.
Oh, man. Still, it's just me.
And I look like Rob Reiner. Or a Wii character that refuses to play tennis.
Because it's too busy getting high.
A Wii character that hangs with Towley.
Hey, Wii, want to get high?
You bet, Towley.
Hey, Goliath, want to get high?
Sure, Towley. Let me ask Davy if I can borrow his roach clip. This is what happens when you become schizophrenic. All of your TV characters that you remember start interfacing with each other. Rin Tin Tin and Gilligan. Never mind. What remains? What remains? Aren't taxes due soon?
Friday.
I better get on it.
Aren't you an accountant or something?
Shh, stop. Don't embarrass me.
I'm going to do mine tomorrow.
Yeah. I better do something. Tomorrow night I'm going to go to Havana's to see the Stickmen.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
Who are they?
Tony Levin. Tony Levin, the bass player for King Crimson and for
Peter Gabriel.
Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
He also is a stick player. You know, that instrument with like 12 mm-hmm. strings that does all kinds of harmonics and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's got a band that he put together called the Stickmen, where I'm sure they're going to do some really wacky, progressive, rhythmic, crazy shit. You know? And that's local here at Havana's. Didn't you and I go to Havana's once?
No.
No.
I think so. Yeah, you were there. Were you at the Pink Floyd show? No.
No. I'm kidding. I just like the way he said that.
Yeah, I know. It's nice.
I saw Brit Floyd.
Oh, Brit Floyd. Mm-hmm.
Here in Manhattan.
That's nice. Yeah. I saw Greg Allman. And the new Riders of the Purple Sage.
Eric Cox playing guitar with Greg Allman.
Who's coming to town?
Was Derek Trucks.
Oh, Derek Trucks. Yeah. Tadushi Trucks. They're either been through here or something.
Tedeschi Truck Band?
Tedeschi Trucks. Tedeschi Trucks, yeah. Yeah. Rightio. Okay, so everyone's sated with
something.
Packets of warm, fuzzy enlightenment or something? Yes, Beth says that I was giving out. Yes, darling, I was giving out warm, fuzzy packets of enlightenment, and now everyone is sated. They've gobbled them down like Reese's Cups. Could you imagine someone listening to this? I'm sorry, did you say that guy was like, what is he? What? Inquiry into what?
Gumby.
Inquiry into Gumby. God, he even gives non-duality a good name. That's like Neo Advaita. It's double Neo.
Postmodern Neo.
Like Neo squared Advaita.
Equatoli's going to check it out.
Come on in. The water's fine. We were talking about you.
Eckhart doesn't like to listen to any music but classical music. He kind of thumbs his nose at modern music.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Serves him right. Spiritual people coming to town soon? Sure be nice to see some spiritual people.
I don't know. Paul Hederman, you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul Hederman threatened to visit in May. I think Dale's doing like a 3-day thing with Adam. Oh, yeah, that's in June. Adam's going to come to Pebble Hill Church, too. And help us. Because Lord knows we need it. Well, thanks for checking in. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Tuesday at the NS Corral.
right.
Where? Like Tuesday at the water cooler? What?
Tuesday at the water cooler, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tuesday at the Asperger's Grill.
This is the retreat for Asperger's.
This is the Asperger's last chance saloon. Thanks so much. See you again soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.